Thank you, Mike. Well, good morning. This is the first talk in the chemical data simulation, and I won't be talking much about chemical data simulation. More on the coupled aspect with dynamics and chemistry in data simulation, using data simulation. This is a contract that we had with the European Space Agency, and there was a fair number of people who contributed to this. I'm basically the coordinator, and I must thank all the good people for their work, and a number of people from Environment Canada, also from the Belgium Institute for Space Aeronomy, York University, and the Institute of for Meteorology and Climatology in Karlsruhe in Germany. So basically, we had this study, which the main goal was to basically to explore what, in a coupled model, in a coupled chemistry dynamics model, what can we gain with data simulation that we don't gain when we are doing an assimilation with a CTM, or just an assimilation with the dynamics only. That was the overarching goal. The more specifically is to develop such a model, the analysis and drawbacks of the coupled assimilation, and also using NGSAT data to drive this system. Just to get the idea here is that, you know, GCMs are developing equations to advance in time the momentum, the thermodynamics, conservation of mass, and have chemical composition as prescribed, especially if we think about ozone. CTM is kind of the opposite, actually, where the momentum, thermodynamics, and total mass is actually given by the analyses or the GCM, and it tries to evolve and evolve the mass of the individual species. Now, the data simulation has evolved in different ways for these two different ways of or different models. With the assimilation with a dynamic system, things have evolved from OI through 3D VAR and then 4D VAR, whereas for chemical data simulation, a lot of the work has begun with 4D VAR or Kalman filter to begin, and with having different data window. Data window of 24 hours typically is considered in a CTM problems, and data simulation windows of 6 hours is considered for the assimilation of dynamics. So how do we bring these two things together? This is just a schematic of the different causality mechanism that is happening in the stratosphere. What is missing, these two blobs here could represent, say, the GCM. And the here I've depicted the ozone here, but it's all the species. Basically, it's temperature would feed into the filter chemistry, the winds uses for the transport. So the missing link when we couple everything together is the radiation that feeds in into the model for the eating rates. So this is from a modeling perspective. What should we consider when we consider data simulation? In other words, is data simulation just a modeling exercise, or is there more to it? First thing is that we need to, the modeling is based on physical laws and causality, okay? And the arrows I just showed before were the causality of things. Data simulation is not based on these principles. It's really based on information content, okay? And the transfer of information or flow of information in time, space, or between variables. And as a result, the linkage are not, the arrows are not necessarily in the same way, okay? For instance, the flow of information like deducing winds from chemical tracer observation defeat causality, but that's what's happening in data simulation. I just want you to realize that you can perhaps gain some more information. This is an example in data simulation you need to prescribe error covariances. And how do we go about this? Well, this is an example of an error covariance, actually cross variance between ozone and temperature, and this is depicted as a function of height and latitude. And so basically for 1 degree temperature variation, you would have these kind of variation for the ozone. Okay, this is in PPMV. And basically I've depicted here two types of error correlation. One is done without the ozone radiation interaction in the model, and this is done with the ozone radiation interaction. So we see very little differences, perhaps a little more in the upper part, but it's very hard to know. And if we take a look at the radiative time scales, well, the radiative time scales is of the order of 20 days in the lower stratosphere and up to like a week in the upper stratosphere. So basically what we're saying here is that these features are the long time scales that occur in the model do not show very much in the error correlation. The error correlation really depicts only the smaller time scale variations. So we come to consider this, is that as far as any adjustment takes place on a short time scale, say of a few days or less, then this should be accounted in having an error covariance. If processes on longer time scale do exist, there's no point in trying to model them with the error covariances, but let the model do its job. Okay, so that's just a guiding principle. Another thing that we came up with is effect of resolution. This is Tom's. This is a different experiments simulating the ozone hole. These are the Tom's total column measurements. This is the couple model that we're running at 1.5 degree resolution, which is fairly good compared to Tom's. Then this is a CTM, just running in the CTM mode, but having the same chemistry as this model here, but running at the lower resolution. And perhaps we don't see because of the light, but the deepest values or the lower values are not quite the same for the ozone hole, and the edge here is not simulated in the same way. Now, often it's argued that, okay, we need the data to get better results, but we often compromise running the model at lower resolution. This is the kind of compromise we're doing to run the 4D VAR. Okay, so in the 4D VAR, we say, okay, we will simulate the observations, but for that we need to run the model at lower resolution, and already you degrade your simulation in order to just accomplish that. Okay, and if then you simulate, then you capture some of the features. So information is also resolution, and so it's very important then when we try to assess the impact of an observation to consider if you have degraded the model in order to accomplish your result, which may change or reduce the value of what you're doing. Okay, so what we've decided to do is to have a model, TLM, and adjoint all at the same resolution. So we're not comparing, things are different. The system we've developed also has a four-dimensional data simulation. It's a 4D VAR approach and 3D VAR. We've also got the error statistics from the innovations rather than just using the instrument error. And we've conducted a number of things concerning temperature analyses to try to get them as precise as possible. So if I look into the flow of information in data simulation, I have this kind of picture, which I would contrast with this one here. Okay, this is in terms of modeling. And for data simulation, I have this, where the tracer transport, all quantities, chemical values would influence on the winds. We have the ozone temperature balance between ozone and temperature, the what I've just showed, and also the geostrophic balance, or the typical adjustment that there is between temperature and winds, which we use all the time for the error covariances. So these are modeled by error covariances, the geostrophic balance, ozone temperature balance, and tracer transport. Well, it's done through a 4D VAR. Now, I'll just go through this some highlights of the study, and I will be talking about one issue, or perhaps two if I have time, and then my colleagues will present more stuff. There's two more talks today on this study and also a poster. So basically what we've decided to do is to actually develop from our existing numerical weather prediction model, GEM, add the chemistry. The model was extended to the stratosphere, and we call that GEM Strato, to a top at 0.1 hectopascal. This model will become operational sometime next year. And we have included a chemistry interface, so we can, this model will be used, has been used for stratospheric chemistry, but it will be extended to the troposphere for our operational air quality forecast program. For this study, we've included the Belgium chemistry that is used for BASCO, which is an operational system for the assimilation of Indesat data. And so we use that CTM, or chemistry package, plug it in line with the GEM model, and have, so basically the chemical transport model has 57 abducted species, plus a simplified heterogeneous chemistry package. The ozone and water vapor is actually included in the radiation calculation, so it's interactive radiatively. The 3D VAR has also been extended to include chemical variables. That's a work that has started a long time ago with the Canadian Mille-Atmosphere model, and now includes cross-covariances between dynamical variables and chemical variables, and also between chemical species as well. 3D VAR has also been included with chemistry, but only in an incremental passive tracer. Okay, so we just use long-lived species, assimilate them, and see how we can perform. Then we have, I will be talking in a few minutes about the ozone radiation effect on predictability, and especially on numerical weather prediction. We've done things regarding 3D VAR, like multi-species 3D VAR, studied and implemented cross-air covariances between temperature and ozone, used 4D VAR to deduce winds. Jean de Grandpré will be talking about that after me. Evaluate the merit of different retrievals from ESA, IMK, and also other observations from the Indesat platform, like such as GOMOS. Done a number of things with the temperature. If I have time, I'll talk about that. Obtained chemical error statistics for the observation and the model using data simulation rather than having the prescribed, you know, typical 20% or 10% of the field and things like that. So we've re-examined the validity of such an approach, and also of using the instrument error. Having a bias correction scheme for radiance assimilation in the stratosphere, and so on. So the model is our numerical weather prediction model, which is a semi-Lagrangian, working in on a finite, they say finite element discretization in the vertical, but it's basically an RSC grid in the horizontal, and there's a hybrid vertical coordinate, but it's non-staggered in the vertical, and it's basically it's a semi-implicit two-time level semi-Lagrangian advection, which has a number of things in the physics, but especially in the which is relevant for the stratosphere is that we use an improved correlated K method to compute the radiation, and ozone and water vapor that are advected are actually online with this calculation. We have orographic and non-orographic gravity wave drag, of course, and the model can run with two types of chemistry package. One is more in a simplified one where ozone climatology is used and a simple parameterization for water vapor, or we can turn with the full chemistry, having 57 species solved by a Rosenbrock solver of third order, and with the simplified parameterization for heterogeneous chemistry using sulfate aerosol climatology. Okay, so one of the interesting things we got is how does the radiation ozone interaction impact weather prediction? And here we'll talk about the assimilation of temperature and the assimilation of both temperature and ozone. In the assimilation of temperature, what we found is that if we assimilate MIPAS temperature with the ozone radiation, the verification against MIPAS, here, is such that in the center curves here is the systematic error or the bias, and then the dashed lines are the standard deviations. Basically, in the red we have the ozone radiation and black no interaction. Basically, we have very little impact on the analyses except in the upper part of the stratosphere where we have slight changes of less than a half a degree. We have the same kind of signal if we compare with HALO, for instance. This is, as far as the ozone is concerned, again, we do have a large bias in the ozone field, but again, the impact of the ozone radiation is very small throughout, except perhaps in the lower stratosphere, where we have a slight decrease, actually a slight increase of the ozone of the variance. So not much impact, or if anything, perhaps a slight decrease if we assimilate the temperature. So this is for the analysis. For forecast, we've conducted an ensemble of forecast, 10-day forecast, and calculated the anomaly correlations. This is how we calculate the anomaly correlations, starting from a single date, say. We conduct several forecasts up to 10 days and compare those forecasts with the corresponding analyses, and we compute the anomaly correlation. This is the kind of thing we got when we assimilate temperature. This is the blue curve here is 100 hectopascal. I should have also another curve here with 500 hectopascal in the troposphere. But basically, we see no impact. The dash curve represent what you get when you have the ozone radiation interaction on. So at 100 hectopascal, no impact. Just little impact at 50 hectopascal, and then 10 hectopascal, small. I have to note here that the assimilation of ozone was conducted only from 10 hectopascal to 100 hectopascal. So we're in the process of extending this experiment to throughout the troposphere, and perhaps this result here will change. But basically very little result, and certainly no result in the troposphere. If we now we conducted the same thing, but with a simulation of temperature and ozone. And here, in red, is depicted the temperature plus ozone assimilation, and black temperature only. So you just see what the added value of assimilating ozone on top of the temperature when we have the ozone radiation on all the time. Okay, so these are the changes. The changes are more felt throughout. This is in the tropics. This is for the temperature field and the ozone field. For temperature, it's felt throughout. There's some changes throughout the stratosphere. And then here, also for the ozone, there's quite a significant change throughout the whole stratosphere. Significant? Yeah, well, those are the significant. These are the sample size here is, let me see. One is a significance of the, that's a t-test, and then there's a Fisher. So basically, if a level of 95%, if it passes a threshold for the mean, then it means that this is significant. And if the dot here, the full dot, means that the variance change is significant. So here it's all significant. Here you have a few places where it's statistically significant, both in the mean and variance. This is the same thing for middle latitude, southern hemisphere, where the variances, you see changes in the air variance, it's all significant. Okay. Now, the interesting part and the really thing that we found very, we didn't expect that, at least not that much, is to see the impact when you assimilate both temperature and ozone. This is the 500 millibar anomaly correlation. Usually we look at the 0.6 level to say that our forecast is good up to 6 days. Okay. With the so the full curve is using an ozone climatology, and the dashed curve is using a full interactive, affecting the ozone with the chemistry and having the ozone radiatively active. And what we got is that at 500 millibar, we have an increase in predictability by a quarter of a day. At 1 hectopascal, we have, I don't know, it's a third of a day, it's not half a day. At 50 hectopascal, we got almost a full day of more predictability. And higher up at 10 hectopascal, it's like more like half a day. So basically what we found is that the having the ozone radiation interaction and the evolving ozone has an impact on the predictability on the weather, both in the troposphere and the stratosphere. The stratosphere doesn't surprise us, but the troposphere does. A lot of impact is actually felt in the temperature field just above the tropopause. There are big changes of temperature just as a result of the ozone radiation interaction. And we're not completing the study to say exactly why this is occurring, but we think that there's impact or propagation downwards in the troposphere from that level that influences. Now we're looking at now to the looking more precisely in weather developments. How does it change the actual weather developments? This is just a statistical figure, but it's consistent. If you look into the time series of anomaly correlation, you see it's always beating. The ozone radiation is always beating the ozone climatology. So I think this is potentially very important for numerical weather prediction. Actually, this is large. Those are large correction by weather prediction standards. And so what we envision is to put in the simulation of the ozone, I should turn it red, ozone irradiation in our operational weather prediction model. So, conclusion, well, I just said that, and I will turn with, I'll just say one thing about the bias correction. We struggle also with that, in the sense that most of the bias correction used in for radiation assumes, you know, if you go with the numerical weather prediction way, we find the radiance needs to be bias corrected, and the approach that is taken is to consider the model or the analysis as perfect, and look into departure of the observation with respect to the model to find bias correction scheme for the radiance. Now, obviously, for the stratosphere, this sounds very funny idea, okay? And so we started to play the lot with that, and we come up with this idea that we should assimilate like mean pass temperature observations to anchor the solution somehow in the stratosphere, and then calculate the bias correction. Using that, we've improved dramatically our system, and this bias correction that we found was also valid at other time periods. So we developed something for the summer that was good for the winter, and it reduces also the anomaly correlation. So all indicators showed us that this was a good way to try to anchor the solution for the radiance. So I'll stop here and take some questions.